Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Well, we're going to be discussing something very interesting this evening. Krishna getting bewildered. That sounds pretty bewildering, doesn't it? There are several places where this happens, and the verse that's under discussion is one of those. This is chapter 12 of Canto 10, and it's a really nice chapter. It has several parts. It's begins with the cowherd boys entering into the Vrindavan forest to herd the cows. And then there's a very nice verse after describing all of the playful things that the little boys do together with Krishna. Just there's different groups of Krishna's friends. One of Krishna's friends is Arjuna. Sakha. Bhaktosi me sakha cheti. Arjuna is Krishna's devotee, bhakta, and his dear friend. So there's different categories of Krishna's friends. And another one of Krishna's friends is Uddhava. Uddhava is Krishna's friend and plus Krishna's friend. He's so intimately associated with Krishna that he gives Krishna advice and Krishna does whatever he says because he's smart. He's a minister type of person. He's constant companion of Krishna outside of Vrindavan. And then there's Krishna's cowherd friends, and they have a certain particular title. And their title says they just play. And that's what being a friend with Krishna in Vrindavan means. You just play. They don't go to school. They just play. That's like that. What a life for a kid, huh? And, when Krishna becomes 11 years and 8 months, that's when Krishna leaves Vrindavan and goes to Mathura. And it's interesting that Krishna has not gone to school yet. Not bad, huh? 11 years, 8 months, you don't haven't gone to school yet. But when he goes to Mathura and kills Kamsa, the first three things that Vasudeva and Devaki do is the arrangement is made for Ugrasena to be reinstated on the throne, Krishna to receive his Upanayana. Upanayana means he receives mantra. Little boys get, at that age, is the right age. They get their mantra from, he gets a mantra in this case from Gargamuni. Same one that did the name giving ceremony, did the Gayatri mantra. And then they send him to school. And it was really interesting. Krishna decided where he wanted to go to school. Most times kids don't get to decide, you know, which school they want to go to. But Krishna had a relationship with Sandipani Muni. So when just a little, you know, it's a little confusing to hear these names, but you'll get used to it once you hear them many times and many times. When Krishna was in Vrindavan, Krishna had a dear friend, Brahmin boyfriend. Krishna was a cowherd boy. But amongst the cowherd boys was one boy who was a Brahmin, born, and, you know, He wore a thread and he did things that Brahmin boys do. And his name was? Starts with an M, these two girls. You know his name? Madhu Mangal. So, you know who Madhu Mangal's father was? Sandipani Muni. You know who Krishna's teacher was? Sandipani Muni. Sandipani Muni was Krishna's teacher. And you know who Sandipani Muni's mother was? Purnamasi. Who is Purnamasi? She's Yogamaya, personified, just like Radharani is Krishna's pleasure potency, or Haladini Shakti personified, right? That's Radharani. Purnamasi is Krishna's Yogamaya personified. So Purnamasi was the grandmother of Madhu Mangal and the mother of Sandipani Muni, and she was a disciple of Narada Muni. Very interesting. So before Krishna was born, Purnamasi showed up. And where did she show up from? Quite some distance. If you know your geography a little bit, India geography, Ujjain, you know what Ujjain is? Maharashtra, Ujjain. And even a little further is the place where Bhakti Thirumaraj established a temple. What's the name of that place? Not Ujjain, but it's near Ujjain. Huh? No, not Gwalior. That's near Ujjain. That's definitely near Ujjain. The place where Sandipani Muni had his school. And I'm forgetting the name also, where he built the temple. But so, from there to Mathura, it's quite some distance. But when it was time for Krishna's going to school, he didn't, there's some details. Why Krishna chose, because he wanted to be, some distance from Mathura, because Krishna was afraid, he was concerned, that if he went to school near Mathura, it might invite disturbances from the remaining demons after killing Kamsa, people might want to get back. And so if he stayed in Mathura, there might be some disturbance. So he wanted to go some distance. Ujjain is the place.
Yeah, Ujjain.
Ujjain is the place.
Yeah,
Ujjain is the place. Ujjain is the place. I'm sorry. Ujjain. Ujjain. It's near Ujjain, where Sandipani Muni's school was, where Krishna went. So, he also, Sandipani Muni, interesting. Sandipani Muni was a worshipper of Lord Shiva. Because Krishna's consideration was if he had a Vaishnava Brahmin teacher, the Vaishnava Brahmin teacher would know who he was. And how could a Vaishnava Brahmin teacher have as a student the personality of Godhead? Wouldn't work. And so he wished to have Sandipani Muni as his teacher. He selected. He was a celebrated teacher, like really good teacher. And Krishna wanted also to give his mercy to Sandipani Muni, who became very much endeared to Krishna after he graduated from school and rescued his son. You know that story? Krishna rescued the son of Sandipani Muni who had deceased, and he brought him back. It's a nice story. We're going to keep going. So in Krishna's childhood pastimes, after he played with the cowherd boys, and then there's one verse that we spent a lot of time on, and that is where Shukadeva Goswami says that the cowherd boys are so fortunate, and all the residents of Vrindavan are so fortunate that they play with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The yogis who realize him as Brahman, and they have the happiness of Brahman, Brahma-sukh, those persons who are yogis, they may realize him as Paramatma. The Dasya Bhaktas, they realize him as the Personality God. If materialists see him as an ordinary person, these cowherd boys are just playing with him. And the others are with him all day long, seeing him constantly. The yogis can't even meditate on a particle of dust from his lotus feet. And these devotees of Raja, they're always with him all the time. So after that long description, then comes the next scene, change of scene. The change of scene is the boys are playing and playing and playing and playing and playing. And on the path, they see this giant serpent, Agasura. And they're puzzled. They've never seen this big cave that's 8 miles long and very dark inside and so forth and so on. And they said, hey, let's go check it out. And they go clapping their hands saying, even if it is a demon, Krishna will save us. Let's go. And they're joyfully going. And so the cowherd boys, the calves, follow the cowherd boys. And they've got their tails wagging. And they go inside the mouth of the serpent. But the serpent doesn't close his jaws because he just wants to kill Krishna. I mean, it's fine to kill the cowherd boys too, but his really objective is to kill Krishna. So then the verse that we're reading says, this is now the main verse for this evening, says, Krishna saw that all the cowherd boys who did not know anyone but him as their Lord had now gone out of his hand and were helpless, having entered like straws into the fire of the abdomen of Agasura, who was death personified. It was intolerable for Krishna to be separated from his friends, the cowherd boys. Therefore, as if seeing that this had been arranged by his internal potency, Krishna was momentarily struck with wonder and unsure what to do. It was not possible because he's the omniscient Supreme Lord. So the topic is how the Lord becomes bewildered by his own potencies. And it's just, the detail is it's a secondary rasa. Secondary and primary rasas. Are you familiar with this at all? I'm looking at you two girls. The five primary rasas, you've heard that before? Okay. We'll go through from lower to upper. There's neutrality or awe and veneration, like the all-powerful supreme, awe and reverence, service, friendship, parental affection, conjugal love. There's a hierarchy. So we'll do it again. Neutrality, awe and reverence, service, friendship, parental affection, conjugal love. Five primary rasas and shades and mixtures, varieties of those. And then there's secondary rasas, and which are seven in number. So 5 plus 7 generally equals 12. There's 7 secondary rasas that serve to enrich, enhance, and make the primary rasas even more elevated. They accentuate. So one of them is astonishment. So the rasa between Krishna and his friends is friendship. That's number 3 in that of the 5. And he holds them is dear as his life, and vice versa. So they, why they entered is they were thinking, hey, maybe it is a demon, we don't know, and if it is, Krishna will save us, and we want to see his wonderful powers. Let's go. Oh, little boys. They want to explore, and Krishna, we just want to see Krishna do his thing. Yay, Krishna, that's what happens when they come out. Yay, Krishna, let's go have lunch. So, but Krishna became bewildered. So that's this secondary rasa of astonishment. There's a Sanskrit term, astonishment. And so even Krishna enjoys that covering of the primary relationship with the cowherd boys and having it heightened or enriched, enhanced by this secondary rasa. So that's what's being discussed for this evening. And to discuss it, we're going to be hearing the description from Jiva Goswami's commentary on chapter 77, which happens in Dwarka. Chapter 77, Canto 10, is Krishna's battle with Shalva. You know this? Do you read Krishna book, you two girls? Shalva? A little bit? No? I'm going to read to you this, the chapter summary for 76 and 77. Shalva was a bad guy. He was a demon. And he had like super mystic powers. Super mystic powers. And he wanted to challenge Krishna. So here's the chapter summary, starting with chapter 76, then 77, and we'll go into this evening's topic. The demon Shalva acquired a huge and terrifying airship, mystical thing. How he used it to attack Dwarka, and how Pradyumna was Krishna's son. Pradyumna was the first son of Rukmini and Krishna, Pradyumna. And Pradyumna was taken from the battlefield during the fighting. So here's the chapter summary, 76. Shalva was one of the kings who had been defeated at the time of Rukmini's marriage. Right? Rukmini and Krishna were married. You know that story? No. Oh. Okay. Rukmini's brother was Rukmi. And Rukmi had a friendship with Shishupal. Ooh. And Rukmini's father wanted Krishna to marry his daughter, Rukmini. His name is Bhishmaka. But the elder brother of Rukmini, he had a friendship with Shalva and he had a friendship with Shishupal. So he wanted her to marry Shishupal. And Rukmini was going, no way, Shishupal, forget it, man. I'm not going to marry that guy. So, but my father and my brother and... So she wrote a letter to Krishna. Sent a messenger, Brahmin messenger, with a letter. Dear Krishna, help! Forget this Shishupal. I want to marry you. How did she know she wanted to marry Krishna? She just heard about Krishna. Who did she hear about Krishna from? Narada Muni. Oh, Krishna's this, Krishna's that. And Rukmini gave her heart to Krishna. Now, Rukmini is the goddess of fortune. So there's a natural, just a pastime. But she wasn't yet married to Krishna, so she became married to Krishna by sending this messenger saying, I'm not going to marry Shishupal. I've given my heart to you. If you don't marry me this lifetime, lifetime after lifetime, I'll wait until we can be married. If you want to marry me, here so I can do it. She's like, she's a princess. She knows how to, you know, make arrangements. So she said, I don't even go out of the palace, but one day I'm going to go see the deity, the family deity, and if you bring a chariot right at that time, you just come and take me. Off we go. So Krishna sent back a messenger. I'll be there. Right on time. So Krishna kidnapped her, and a whole bunch of soldiers fought to stop Krishna from taking Rukmini, and he defeated everybody. And one of the soldiers he defeated was Shalva. Now Shalva was a mystic guy. He was a king, but he also had mystic powers. So here's the... Shalva was one of the kings who had been defeated at the time of Rukmini's marriage. Having vowed then that he would rid the earth of the Yadavas, he began worshipping Lord Shiva each day by eating only a palm full of dust. Yummy, huh? After a year had passed, Shiva appeared before Shalva and asked him to choose a benediction. Shalva requested a flying machine that could go anywhere and that would strike terror in the hearts of the demigods, demons, and humans alike. Lord Shiva granted this request and had Maya Danava construct for Shalva a flying iron city. Not just a 747, a whole city made of iron named Saubha. Shalva took this vehicle to Dwarka, where he and his huge army laid siege to the city. It was just a get-back mentality because of Krishna's taking Rukmini. From his airplane, Shalva bombarded Dwarka with tree trunks, boulders, and other missiles, and he produced a mighty whirlwind that obscured everything with dust. So then the Yadu soldiers fought, and Pradyumna was one of them. Pradyumna and Satyaki and other Yadu heroes saw the plight of Dwarka and her residents. They went out to do battle with Shalva's forces. Pradyumna, the best of warriors, destroyed his divine weapons, with his divine weapons, all of Shalva's illusory magic. And he also bewildered Shalva himself. Ooh. Thus Shalva's airplane began wandering aimlessly on the earth, in the sky, and on the top of mountains. But then a follower of Shalva's named Duman struck Pradyumna on the chest with his club, whereupon Pradyumna's chariot driver, thinking his master seriously injured, carried him from the battlefield. But quickly, Pradyumna regained consciousness and sharply criticized his driver for doing this. So that's chapter 76, and we're working our way to chapter 77. Summary. This chapter describes how Krishna disposed of Shalva, the master of deception, and destroyed his airship, Saubha. Having been removed from the battlefield, Pradyumna was extremely ashamed. And he ordered his driver to take his chariot once again into the presence of Duman. As Pradyumna fought with Duman, other Yadu heroes like Gada, Satyaki, and Samba began to create havoc among Shalva's army. The battle continued in this way for 27 days and nights. Then Krishna returned to Dwarka, and he found it under siege. He at once ordered his chariot driver, Dwarka, to drive him onto the battlefield. Suddenly, Shalva noticed the Lord and threw his spear at Krishna's charioteer. But Krishna shattered the weapon into hundreds of pieces and pierced Shalva and his Saurabh, the Saubha vehicle, with numerous arrows. Shalva responded by shooting an arrow that struck Krishna's left arm. Whoa! How's that possible? amazingly, the Lord dropped his Sharangabho, which he was holding in his left hand. The demigods watching the battle cried out in alarm upon seeing the bow fall, while Shalva took the opportunity to insult Krishna. Lord Krishna then struck Shalva with his club, but the demon, vomiting blood, disappeared. A moment later, a man came before Lord Krishna. After offering him obeisances, introduced himself as a messenger from his mother, Devaki. The man informed the Lord that his father, Vasudev, had been kidnapped by Shalva. Upon hearing this, Lord Krishna seemed to lament like an ordinary man. Shalva then led forward someone who looked just like Vasudev, decapitated him, and took the head with him into Susoba airship. It was a trick. Sounds like something from Ramayana, right? The head of Ram, the sorcerer of Ravana, sounds similar. Upon hearing this, Lord Krishna seemed to lament like an ordinary man. So that's the topic, the seeming bewilderment of Krishna, because he's omniscient. He knows the whole thing, and he's all-powerful. So how's that possible? So quickly, Krishna recovered himself, knew what to do, finished Shalva and his airplane. End of story. So now, here's some of the verses. And all this is just the background to understand how it is that the Lord can, in his pastimes, appear to be bewildered like one of us. It's a secondary rasa. That's the short answer. As soon as Lord Chuta withdrew his club, after smashing him in the chest, Shalva disappeared from sight. And a moment later, a man approached the Lord. Bowing his head down to him, he announced, "Devaki has sent me." And sobbing, he spoke the following words. The man said, "Oh, Krishna, Krishna, mighty armed one, who are so affectionate to your parents, Shalva has seized your father and taken him away, as a butcher leads an animal to slaughter." When Krishna heard this disturbing news, he, who was playing the role of a mortal man, showed sorrow, that's a secondary rasa, and compassion is another secondary rasa. And out of love for his parents, he spoke the following words like an ordinary conditioned soul, something like Ram feeling the feelings that he was feeling when Sita was kidnapped. "Balaram is ever vigilant, and no demigod or demon can defeat him. So how could this insignificant Shalva defeat him and abduct my father? Indeed, fate is all powerful," lamenting like a regular fellow. Shalva said, "Here is your dear father who begot you and for whose sake you are living in this world. I shall now kill him before your very eyes. Save him if you can, O weakling." After he mocked the Lord in this way, the magician Shalva appeared to cut off Vasudev's head with his sword. Taking the head with him, he entered the Sobha vehicle, which was hovering in the sky. And then, how can lamentation, bewilderment, material affection or fear, all born out of ignorance, be ascribed to the infinite Supreme Lord, whose perception, knowledge, and power are all similarly infinite? And now all of that is the background. It's to get to this verse. By nature, Lord Krishna is full of knowledge. He possesses unlimited powers of perception. Yet for a moment, out of great affection for his loved ones, he remained absorbed in the mood of an ordinary human being. He soon recalled, however, that this was all a demoniac illusion engineered by Maya Danava and employed by Shalva. So now, by virtue of self-realization, fortified by service rendered to his feet, devotees of the Lord dispel the bodily concept of life which has bewildered the soul since time immemorial. Thus, they can attain eternal glory in his perpetual association. How then can the supreme truth, the destination of all genuine saints, be subject to illusion? So that's the topic. We're discussing all of this is to discuss this one verse from chapter 12 about how Krishna, when he saw the cowherd boys entering the mouth of a Gasura demon, he wanted to do something, but gosh, he's all powerful. One of the potencies of Krishna, it's a nice name, Satya Sankalpa Shakti. Satya means truth. Satya. Sankalpa means intention or that which you wish to have happen. And Shakti. So whatever Krishna desires, it happens. That and he doesn't have to do anything. His potencies do everything. But whatever he desires, that's it. Nobody can check it. So if he didn't want the cowherd boys to go into the mouth of the Gasura demon, why did they go into the mouth of the Gasura demon? It's perplexing. It's contradictory. So what's going on? That's the topic. So now this is Jiva Goswami's commentary on that topic. By service to Krishna's feet and realization of one's true nature, Atma, Vidyaya, devotees destroy knowledge, which is opposite to their swarup, their spiritual identity. The devotees attain liberation with realization of their swarup. And they attain Vaikuntha, which is unlimited, infinite, like the form of the Lord, though it is a planet. How then can the Supreme Lord have ignorance or moha? How can he be bewildered? Paragraph. It is not possible that he began worrying on seeing bad omens. The Lord is attainable by the devotees. The devotees are not interested in liberation. Since Krishna has a body of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, it is not possible for Shava to have pierced his arm. Thus, there is no contradiction in this episode. No contradiction means it's a pastime. He's playing as if. So it's not contradiction when we understand it's a pastime or he's playing as if he's one of us. He's not. Paragraph. Since Balaram took permission from the elder Kurus when he departed, according to the Sabha Parva, it is not contradictory. That is to say, Balaram, Krishna was meditating. How is it possible that Shava was able to kidnap Vasudeva, our father, when Balaram was present? Because Krishna and Balaram were away. Balaram went back to Dwarka before Krishna went back to Dwarka. While they were both away, that's when this attack took place to destroy the Yadus, Shava and his army and everything. So that's why Pradyumna was in the front of the battle, Krishna's son. Instead of, you know, if Krishna and Balaram were there, forget it. It's over. So, since Balaram took permission from the elder Kurus when he departed, according to the Sabha Parva, it is not contradictory. This is Mahabharata. Though Baladeva departed for Dwarka first, it is possible he arrived at Dwarka with Krishna. When Krishna came, it could have been he went with Krishna. He arrived with Krishna. If Balaram was present in Dwarka, it would seem improper that he let Pradyumna do the main fighting while he was present. Even materialists see no contradiction in this situation. What to speak of Vaisampayana Vyas, the author of the Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva. and others being ignorant concerning this. It's just a paragraph saying this reference to Balaram and how could Brahm let it happen. There are different ways of looking at how that was possible. It's just to assist Krishna in experiencing the joy of ecstasy in the protecting his devotees by killing demons and so forth. Because why did Krishna appear? One of the main reasons. The demigods asked him, help. The earth is overburdened with demoniac kings, and one of them is Shalva, so please relieve earth from the burden. So Krishna is giving satisfaction to the demigods. He's giving pleasure to his devotees because the devotees are being protected also. But the devotees enjoy seeing Krishna exhibit his powers. But when Krishna is in difficulty, like an arrow is shot into his arm, or he sees this sorcery of Vasudeva being decapitated, he shows wonder. But then he shows his power. It's the devotees enjoy. There's danger. Oh, now we're safe. Paragraph. Seeing omens and other actions were just pastimes. It is not contradictory. Since the Lord has his internal intentions, it is difficult for others to understand such apparent contradictions that was expressed in the previous verse by Shukadeva Goswami. I read the previous verse. I'll read the previous verse again. How can lamentation, bewilderment, material affection, or fear, all born out of ignorance, be ascribed to the infinite Supreme Lord? Answer, it can't. It's the appearance of those things through pastime. By saying that the Lord has infallible knowledge and is also not subject to lamentation, and is also subject to lamentation, the words would be self-contradictory and would arise only from ignorance. By understanding the details, some persons obtain knowledge, but Krishna has self-knowledge. He doesn't need to understand anything. Those who were previously controlled by Maya later become controlled by the sweetness of the Supreme Being. They are then among those who have crossed the cycle of birth and death, samsara. These are the persons mentioned in the verse. Still, they apparently show material emotions. In other words, they're also amazed at seeing that Krishna is amazed. An example of such a person amazed by seeing that Krishna is amazed. As an example is Prahlad. On seeing the suffering of the materialists, he revealed his sorrow. That's a secondary emotion. Secondary rasa, excuse me. His sorrow to Nrisingadeva. Prahlad is like, nothing can touch me. But when he sees worldly people suffering, that gives him pain. Or Brahma's bewilderment. Do you two girls know the Brahma stealing the calves and cowherd boys? You know that one. So when he went back and saw what he saw, look, there's the calves and cowherd boys. Wait a minute, they're over in a cave. And then he went back. Then he saw all those forms of Narayana and everything else. He was bewildered. At the beginning of the story of Brahma's bewilderment, Shukadeva was bewildered. Bharat Maharaj, you know the story of Bharat Maharaj, who then became a deer and then became Jed Bharat, you know that one? Attached to the deer, yeah. So after the deer, he became Jed Bharat. Jed Bharat, Jed means dull, Jed Bharat. He became like, you know, oblivious to anything. But then later, he showed mercy to a king, King Rahugana. And King Rahugana didn't have any special connection with the personality of Godhead, but Judd Barr just decided to be merciful and gave him transcendental knowledge. The king was, wow. It worked. He had some quality in him that Judd Barrett saw. Then the Kumaras, you know the four Kumaras, right? Little boys, sons of Brahma, they went to the gates of Vaikuntha. They were not permitted to enter the gates of Vaikuntha. Mom says you know, but you forgot. Okay. They're the first sons of Brahma, and they decided they don't want to get involved in worldly anything. So they just maintained little boy forms, like little boy forms. Little boys, like 4 years old. And they didn't wear clothes. They just like, you know, they were just oblivious. Four Kumaras. And they stayed like that their whole life. They just, you know, little boy forms. Maybe 3 years old. So they made their way all the way to Vaikuntha. Because they could travel anywhere. When they got to Vaikuntha, the gatekeeper said, whoa, you're not permitted to come in. You got to be a pure devotee to come into Vaikuntha. And they cursed him. Thus they became Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. You know that story? No? Okay. That happened. So when they made that curse, Lord Narayan came to the gate and apologized. And then they felt, oh no, we made a big offense. The Kumaras described their fear caused by their curse of the doorkeepers of the Lord of Vaikuntha. Here's another example. Krishna in the Damodar Leela established this contrary emotion. That is, he, who is the control of everyone, was controlled by his mother, or by the love of his mother. And it shows, the overall point is, Krishna is merciful to his devotees. So now comes this verse, finally, chapter 10, text 12, excuse me, Canto 10, chapter 12, text 27. This is the Agasura demon situation. Here's the translation. All of this is this one verse. Krishna, giver of fearlessness to all beings, saw that the cowherd boys, who did not know anyone but him as their shelter, had now escaped from his hand and were helpless and were now suffering. Like straws to be burned by the fire of the abdomen of Agasura, who was death personified, bewildered by his affection. He was astonished by what had been arranged by his appointed Yogamaya Shakti potency. Now back to this chapter 77. Similarly, in order to protect the Yadus, Krishna fought with Shalva and showed various emotions. Though he appears to be bewildered by the maya of demons, one should not think that he can be subject to lamentation and ignorance. There are verses, of course, like the following. This is now from chapter 13 of Canto 10. Krishna became bewildered when the calves were stolen, the calves and cowherd boys. That one, the story you know. Thereafter, when Krishna was unable to find the calves, he returned to the bank of the river, but there he was also unable to see the cowherd boys. Thus, he began to search for both the calves and the boys everywhere in the forest. But wait a minute, he's omniscient. So how is he bewildered and can't find, you know, he knows what's going on. He enjoys that emotion of not just being God, but being, you know, having emotions of affection for his dear friends. This is a description of Brahma's maya. So in that pastime which you're familiar with, Brahma wanted to see, after seeing the killing of the Agasura demon, he wanted to see what's the extent of Krishna's mystic potencies. So I'll show some of my mystic potencies and then see what Krishna does. It was Krishna's mystic potency, Brahma's mystic potency that the cowherd boys and the calves just disappeared. Brahma had stole them with his mystic power. So to please his devotee Brahma, Krishna was acting bewildered. That's what is being said here. It should be understood that the Lord, by his own desire, accepted this position of bewilderment in order to have pleasing pastimes with his great devotee Brahma. Because of the Lord's infallible position, in this verse it says, quote, they destroy knowledge opposite to their swarup by serving the Lord's feet. This is devotees. If there's anything for the devotee that causes them to be in Maya, it's dismissed by serving Krishna. It's right in this verse that we just read. And based upon that understanding, there's another meaning, and we're almost done. 7:30. So we've been reading the Shalva story. So by nature, Lord Krishna is full of knowledge, and he possesses unlimited powers of perception. Yet for a moment, out of great affection for his loved ones, he remained absorbed in the mood of an ordinary human being. He soon recalled, however, that this was all a demoniac illusion engineered by Maya Danava and employed by Shalva. Now, alert to the actual situation, Lord Achyuta saw before him on the battlefield neither the messenger nor his father's body. It was as if he had awakened from a dream. Seeing his enemy flying above him in the Sobha plain, the Lord then prepared to kill him. We're almost done. From the time Krishna became absorbed in remembrance of Vasudeva, that's his father, because of that imitation, while he remained omniscient in his spiritual form, he remained aloof from illusion because he had great powers of perception. He did not even see the illusion after that. An example is given. A person of discrimination, even while sleeping, thinks this is a dream. Thus he does not see things related to dreams. That's the end of this evening's discussion. So, the whole purpose was to show, Jiva Goswami wanted to show what's the nature of the Lord apparently being bewildered by circumstances that are created by his own potencies. It's all a pastime in any case. So part of the pastime is the Lord's enjoyment like this, the Lord's enjoyment like that, the protection of his devotees, demigods from the sky saying, oh no, and then, oof, it's safe again. So they're going through their different emotions, ending up with feeling protection and shelter in the Lord. That when there's some risky situation, or some apparently bewildering situation, or some amazement kind of situation, or some sorrow kind of situation, it's varieties for Krishna and Krishna's pure devotees. It's varieties of loving. The principal rasa is being nourished by those various episodes. It adds excitement and happiness to the primary exchange of love with each of his devotees. And that's the nature of rasa. You've heard the word rasa, right? We went through the five primary. Neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental affection, conjugal love. Those are rasas. and that the rasas are mixed with other emotions, always. And those secondary other emotions, they enhance the primary ones. So what we're hearing, when Krishna becomes bewildered, don't get bewildered. It's just, he's enjoying. And he's enjoying for his devotees, and he's enjoying for the demigods. He's enjoying. The pastime becomes more fun that way. He could not get bewildered to be less exciting. How you can shoot him in his arm. His body, the Satchitananda. Not possible. You know the story from Mahabharata of Grandfather Bhishma? No? Grandfather Bhishma was on a battlefield fighting against Arjuna and Krishna. Yeah? And Bhishma Dev is a really good fighter. He was firing arrows to hit Arjuna. It was because he knew Krishna would protect Arjuna. So he wasn't worried for Arjuna. He just wanted to see, Krishna to show this quality that called Bhakta Vatsala. He just loves his devotees. Bhakta Vatsala. He loves his devotees. He'll do anything for his devotees. So the arrows were being fired at Arjuna and Krishna would get in the way because he was the chariot driver. And the arrow would hit Krishna's chest and Krishna would go, ah. And Arjuna was thinking, oh no, Krishna's being hit by arrows meant for me. Oh no. Krishna was enjoying. He was enjoying his relationship with Grandfather Bhishma, showing Grandfather Bhishma, yes, I will always protect my devotee. You know how that story ends up? Arjuna's chariot wheel broke. So Arjuna got down to fix his chariot wheel. And Bhishma was taking the opportunity to shoot Arjuna while he was fixing his chariot wheel. So you know what Krishna did? He picked up the broken chariot wheel, held it up in the air, and went charging at Grandfather Bhishma to smash him with the chariot wheel. Grandfather Bhishma went, he dropped his bow. And right at that time, the sun was setting, so the conch blew, which meant the end of the fight for the day. So Krishna didn't have to smash Grandfather Bhishma. Grandfather Bhishma wanted to see Krishna protect his devotee, which he did. Everyone was happy. It's just pastime. It looked pretty scary for a while, though. Arjuna was going to get killed by Grandfather Bhishma. But no way. Krishna will protect his devotee. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. I had a somewhat different plan, but seeing you two here, I decided to go the direction I did. Tell this nice story.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. Tulsi Maharani is very dear to Krishna. So how can I also become very dear to Krishna?
Well, you become dear to those who are dear to Krishna, and you become dear to Krishna. Huh? What was that?
She said thank you.
Prabhupada gives this example. Supposing there's a really big man, some man that has a big office, and to get to see that big man, you got to make an appointment. And it's like, you're not going to get to see the big man because you don't have the credential to see him. But supposing you see that big man out in a park in the morning and he's walking his dog. And you just walk up to the dog and scratch the dog on the chin and pat him on the head. And you've made friendship with the big man because you've made friendship with his dog. So how do you become dear to Krishna? Become dear to those who are dear to Krishna. What's that? I think we better give you the microphone.
I'm supposed to be dear to the devotees of Krishna.
Yeah. Representatives of Krishna. Yeah. Like that. You've got one? Let's hear it.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. I have two questions.
Two questions. Okay.
My first one is, how did Krishna lift up the Govardhana hill?
With his spiritual strength. Because without spiritual strength, you can't do such a thing. But spiritual strength is greater than any other kind of strength. That's how he did it.
And my second question is, how can I become a nice devotee of Krishna?
Whoa. Well, you learn from those who are nice devotees of Krishna how to be a nice devotee of Krishna, and you try to assist them, and you learn from them. Just like, I mean, someday, probably someday, you'll learn to cook from your mother. And the way to learn how to cook, you just help your mother in the kitchen, and she'll show you this and that. You should be happy to show you this and that. And then you learn how to cook by learning from one who knows how to cook. So you learn from those who already know how to be a nice devotee of Krishna, and they'll help show you. They'll be very happy to show you how to do things nice for Krishna.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Just like, if you don't mind, when there was a question the other day, it was on Tuesday, was Radharani's appearance day, right? Tuesday? Radhastami? Huh? Tuesday. Radharani's appearance. So there was a question during the morning class, why don't we fast all day instead of fasting half day? Because we fast all day for Krishna's appearance, and Radharani is non-different than Krishna. So why don't we fast the whole day for Radharani's appearance? So I said, you know, the scriptures teach you can, in fact, it's nice. But if you also may want to make a feast for Radha, and so you make that feast offering midday and have a midday feast. So Radha Priya heard that. She made a nice cake for Krishna. And that same day, I got a photograph from two other people that made a nice cake for Radharani. They put Radharani's name on the cake. For the pleasure of Radharani. That's how you become a nice devotee. You find out from devotees that they're enthusiastic to please Krishna, and you learn from them. But having that desire, that's that you're halfway there. The rest is easy.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. The question is like for my wife, actually. So She wants to know that what is the difference between, you know, the worship and bhajanti, basically bhajan. Like, it's the same or like, what's the difference?
Well, they're certainly similar, and there is a difference. Bhajan comes from this is Srila Prabhupada. Look at the last verse of chapter 6 Bhagavad Gita. The purport, the very first line, the root word of bhakti is bhaj, bhaj. So bhajan comes from bhaj. Bhakti comes from bhaj. And it means engaging the senses and with the object of the senses to please the master of the senses. That's bhakti or bhaj. So bhajan is commonly, it can mean singing, but it's not just singing. It's activities meant for the pleasure of Krishna, practical activities. And worship has more to do with a mood. And worship is commonly used in connection with deity worship. But, you know, it's an English word. It's not a Sanskrit word. We worship a deity, but the deity worship is part of this activity of bhaj or devotional service. So it's a category of devotional service, and it's describing more the mood of worship. Okay?
This is my question. Maharaj, from Srimad Bhagavatam and reading the different scriptures like Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see that there are two extremes of mercy that comes. One is like Prahlad Maharaj, his devotion to Lord Narasingadev is at the topmost level. We can't even imagine, you know, reaching that. And on the other side, we see Kubja, like in Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
She is called Trivakra, Trivakra.
Yeah.
And all she did was just, you know, give some sandalwood, anoint Krishna with some sandalwood paste, and she achieved the highest result. Like Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see how all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya are on very high level practicing bhakti, but on the other side, the dog received the mercy because it just followed the devotees, Shivananda Sen. So it's very bewildering to see the two extremes. You know, how does Krishna give the mercy? Where should we place ourselves in order to receive the mercy?
How should we situate ourselves?
Yeah, situate. In the sense, I cannot think about the level of Prahlad Maharaj and Sudama and great devotees. But I am not a dog here, or I am not a kubja kind of person. So, where is the center point? Where is the easiest that I can do from my side, so that I can receive the same mercy that they have received?
The main starting point is, I mean, just like during the festival of the Holy Name, we use this phrase, yearning, enthusiasm, and spontaneous, say yes. Yearning, enthusiasm, spontaneous. So yearning is, a core desire, and how that manifests itself is going to be different for you and for everybody, but the principle is yearning for that to be again connected, yoga, to be connected with the Supreme. And since the scriptural understanding is it's through bhakti that that's possible, so yearning to be connected through practical activity of service, starting with hearing, chanting, remembering, and other forms of service. So where the unfolding of that goes is going to be different for each of us, but the principle is quite simple, similar. So we with humility, which says I'm very tiny and quite insignificant. So rather than feeling myself to be anything other than tiny and insignificant, let me take up the means following great souls to try to please Krishna. I mean, that which looks confusing or bewildering can be made very simple just by the simple principle. So we're introduced to that awakening of our Krishna bhakti. Who knows how many lifetimes we've been at this before this lifetime, but here we are this lifetime. So it's not so relevant what we did previous lifetime, it's where we are right now. And awakening our attraction for Krishna through serving the great souls. Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahur Vimuktes. You just make ourselves eligible for mercy and be eager for mercy. This is this yearning. Be eager for mercy and be eager to do, to render, you know, within reason, of course, but with be eager to render service and expect mercy. And it'll come however it comes. I mean, I was thinking about this question somebody asked the other day. You know, what did the jackal do in order to be eligible to get, you know, Radharani's mercy? And, you know, to become a jackal, you know, it's bad karma. But to become a jackal in Vrindavan, that's good fortune. And you know, just be a jackal in Vrindavan and get Radharani's mercy. But, you know, to become a jackal in Vrindavan, there's something behind that. Besides, you know, what it takes to get the body of a jackal. If to get a jackal in Vrindavan, during the time that Radha and Krishna are performing their pastimes, what good fortune. So, it's this yearning. I wish to be again connected with Krishna in the medium of service to him. That's the seed. And then it grows however Krishna wants it to grow.
Can I ask you a follow-up question?
Yeah.
On the same, I asked the question about the jackal, Guru Maharaj, the other day. And what is confusing, it's not clear, is, for example, Kala Krishna Das, who went along with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the South India Yatra. Even he was in the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he got diverted.
Yes, he did.
So, I'm thinking like I am dedicating my whole life, to the Sampradaya and this, to Radha and Krishna. But I'm not still clear, on what is the correct way to, you know, move forward, that the goal that Prabhupada says in most of the lectures, like he finishes the lecture by saying, go back home, back to God, go back home, back to God. So that, how is that possible? What is the formula? Is not clear. Is there anything that you can say like, just follow this and we will achieve the goal? Because I speak to many devotees and nobody is clear. Not clear, but you know, they say like, I'm struggling with sadhana. You know, this is a problem, that's a problem, sadhana is a problem. Everybody is speaking about sadhana is a problem. But I am thinking that it should be positive. It should be like, okay, I've surrendered to Radha and Krishna. They will take care of me. I am trying my best. They will take care of me. They will take me in this very lifetime. I have 100% faith.
Well, you know, it can be as simple. If you give a silver bullet answer, then you have to unpack it. But the silver bullet answer has an unpacked principle. And it's, you know, and that's get the mercy of the elevated Vaishnavas. Be eager for that mercy. It's the same answer. Yearning. So it's effort and mercy. Yearning includes both. I'm making some effort and I want some mercy. I'm dependent upon mercy. So, but, you know, the formula isn't, Rupa Goswami describes, there's many nice verses in Rupa Goswami's writings, but he specifically outlines how to get back to Godhead. And there's what you do externally and there's what you do internally. And the externally is you serve the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, who outlined how to do the service that's assigned to us. And then internally, there's associates of Braj. And internally, we cultivate the mood of service to those associates of Braj. There's an external and there's an internal cultivation. That's to enter into Braj. To enter into the Braj, you have to have the mood of the residents of Braj. Now the associates of Lord Chaitanya, they have that same. That's the same of their followers of Lord Chaitanya, who has the mood of Raj. But there's so we don't, we're involved in the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and simultaneously there's an internal cultivation of the mood of the residents of Braj. So the mood of the residents of Braj comes from following the mood of the residents of Lord Chaitanya. It's there. In the mood of the residents of Lord Chaitanya, the mood of the residents of Braj is there. It's not, you know, there's, you take the seed and you grow the seed and it starts to unfold. It's not like there's something not being told to you and there's some esoteric secret teaching that you have yet to discover or something. It's just the maturing or unfolding of that seed. The seed is preliminary faith and association with devotees and bhajana kriya and art. So that's the unfolding of the seed. And it brings one to that stage, back home, back to Godhead stage. And specifically for followers of Lord Chaitanya, it's Vrindavan. And the path to Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami is clearly giving. It's a nectar devotion. The verse is there in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, but the summary study is there in nectar devotion. You'll find that verse that I just made reference to in that video recording. The verse is right there. Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu verse. It's very clear. Not unclear. But it's just not a secret or hidden or something. It's just application of the Rupa Goswami, following Rupa Goswami. And we'll get there. I don't know what the confusion, bewilderment, uncertainty, lack of clarity is.
So the capacity, Guru Maharaj. So I'm not capable of doing, you know.
You're capable of doing what you're capable of doing, and that's what you do. And then your capacity grows.
And what is the maximum of it? There is no.
What's the maximum? What
of the capacity? That.
Well, you know.
There's nothing like that, right?
Yeah, there's no such thing. It's just it's dynamic, not static. So we are where we are who we are, and we grow.
So it cannot happen in one lifetime.
Or why do you say that?
I'm just asking. So because the capacity.
Of course, the question is silly. It can happen. In this lifetime, during this lifetime. In fact, the verse you'll hear when you hear the recording, it's in this lifetime we're to do this. Not, I'm trying to understand what your confusion is because it's very straightforward and simple. You know, what's the limit of capacity? There's no limit. It grows.
So the whatever capacity we have grown in our life, at the end of our life, will we reach the same result? Is the question.
You carry consciousness stays with you. The body changes.
That is correct, Guru Maharaj. But what I'm asking is, will that be the end of our travel in this material world? Because whatever.
I don't understand your question.
Will we go back home, back to Godhead, with whatever capacity?
You can go back home, back to Godhead in this lifetime. It's not a destination after this life. It's consciousness. You can be with Krishna in this lifetime. You can go on with your duties, and you're with Krishna in this lifetime.
Is Is there a difference between I can and I will? Is there?
Well, that's up to you.
That is where I am coming to. You know, what should I do for that? I don't want the can, I want the will. I will be there.
So, it's effort and mercy. You can't do it on your own. You make effort and you rely on mercy. And you wait for Krishna to bestow his mercy, knowing that he's merciful. You can't hurry Krishna. You can hurry Krishna, but you can't. Anything else? After. Okay.
No, Guru Maharaj. There is one question pending from old classes. Is that
okay? What would we do without our phones? We have to have memories.
This is from Prema Manjari Mataji. We came across one of my Prabhu's friend, and he is the worshipper of some goddess. And he said that, why don't you worship goddess? Because we have to go through Radha in order to reach Krishna. So he is asking, like, why are you saying Krishna? Why you don't worship the goddess? How should we answer this question?
Well, we don't worship goddess without God, and we don't worship God without goddess. We worship Radha Krishna. And in the form of the mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra is God and goddess. Not one without the other. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.